areas. Since then, Indian involvement in Sri Lanka has been limited to economic and social affairs. From New Delhi, this is Vinod K. Chol for Free Speech Radio News.
Family members of Korean farmers detained during this month's protest against the World Trade Organization arrived in Hong Kong today to be present during tomorrow's court hearing. The Archbishop of Hong Kong has also publicly given his support to the protesters while characterizing the actions of the Hong Kong police as inappropriate. Dante Tosa files this report.
Hong Kong police arrested nearly 1,000 people during protests against the World Trade Organization ministerial meeting earlier this month. The majority were released within days without charge. 14 protesters, mostly Korean farmers, are facing legal action. They have been charged with unlawful assembly, which carries a penalty of 5 years in prison. The Archbishop of Hong Kong, Joseph Zen, in addition to publicly supporting the Korean farmers who protested against the WTO, also gave surety to the detainees, a legal support guarantee that was required in order to secure the temporary release. The 14 accused are due to appear in court tomorrow. Their legal team is asking that the charges to be dropped so the defendants can return to their homes. This is Dante Toza for Free Speech Radio News in Hong Kong.
Late Wednesday, a civil court ordered a temporary halt to the official bulldozing of homes deemed unsafe in New Orleans. Christian Roseland has more.
In a last-minute legal battle to stop the bulldozing of flood-damaged properties in the Lower Ninth Ward, lawyers from the Grassroots Legal Network and the Loyola Law Clinic won a temporary victory yesterday against a city administration, which they say was attempting to rush the process of home demolitions at a time when few residents are around to question what is happening. City inspectors have declared over 5,000 homes unsafe to enter in New Orleans, most of those in the city's Lower Ninth Ward. Of those homes, 2,500 were scheduled to be destroyed beginning this week. Steve Bradbury of Acorn, a plaintiff in the case, says that while many of these homes are damaged beyond repair, displaced homeowners are not being adequately informed of what is happening. The temporary injunction lasts until January 6th, when a full hearing on the demolition of these homes will be held. For Free Speech Radio News in New Orleans, this is Christian Roseland.
And finally, FSRN would like to retract the December 19th headline story about the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth student who said he was visited at his home by Department of Homeland Security agents after requesting a copy of Mao Zedong's The Little Red Book. The story was first reported in the New Bedford Standard Times and later picked up by a number of news outlets and circulated on the Internet. According to the Boston Globe, the student has since confessed to the UMass professor, Brian Williams, who FSRN interviewed, that the story was fabricated. Though FSRN reporter Catherine Comp took measures to confirm the story with Homeland Security officials, her calls were not returned. I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
International donors announced today that they will withdraw $375 million in aid to Ethiopia's government following its post-election crackdown on dissidents. 100 journalists and opposition supporters were charged with treason, genocide, and other crimes last week. The aid cuts come at a bad time for Ethiopians. A monitoring agency says millions are threatened by a coming famine. Jenny Johnson reports.
An allegedly fraudulent election in May continues to plague Ethiopia. The World Bank, European Union, and Britain said they plan to stop aid to Ethiopia directly and funnel it through the United Nations. Outside the U.S. State Department building today, several Ethiopians gathered in the rain to pressure the United States to change its policy toward their country. Murchaw Senshaw says hundreds of thousands are being kept in concentration camps for opposing the government.
All political prisoners are coming from different communities, teachers, workers, every government officials. That's why we are still crying here.
And so much for Free Radio Santa Cruz News. Coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the December 29th, 2005 show with special co-host Thomas Levitt and, of course, your very own Uncle Robert. Stay with us.
night with a second-hand Saturday night special. No, downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capuleto that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out mini trucks as the cat calls of the present are heard up and down Santa Clara Street. And beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no fucking Mexican zone. Downtown, downtown when you're brown on a Friday night is no place to be, because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown. For no other reason, and you will find yourself at the corner of 27th in Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs. Put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, but somewhere someone's getting arrested for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting beat to a pulp by Billy Clubs in a back alley for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting shot for being brown in downtown. And everywhere,
Trece Cholos, Grito Serpentino, and greetings from Bathrop Spears Broadsides. With me tonight is Thomas Levitt, who will be your host for the next four shows, maybe thereafter. You never can tell. He may grow on the Free Radio Collective. Say hello, Thomas.
Hello.
And Thomas, of course, is a introduced him numerous times. This time you can introduce yourself. What's cooking with you, Thomas?
Not much. This should be an interesting experiment. Hopefully you will actually make it back from your trip.
Oh, I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will. assuming that all goes well.
Yes, and that there's no untoward interference with your freedom to travel.
Indeed, indeed. Traveling by air is air-raising or hair-raising.
Actually, according to a judge I just read, that was John Gilmore, this Electronic Freedom Foundation guy, was suing the feds on the basis that he shouldn't have to show ID to travel on a plane. And the judge's rationale was, you do have freedom to travel as long as you can walk anywhere you want to go.
Hey, it's a very kind of exercise-conscious country. I'm going to play a little of Julia Vinograd, some of her poetry from a few years ago. She has a taped version out. Actually, now it's on CD, but this is a tape called Eye of the Hand. Then we'll be back with more exciting travel alerts for all of you adventurous travelers.
be the way a junkie hates the fix he can't afford and will have to hustle for, and often enough won't even get a rush from. Just keep off the horrors for another hour. I hate poetry the way a married couple who don't believe in divorce hate each other. I hate poetry the way Alcoholics Anonymous hates the liquor and has meetings about it. I hate poetry the way an atheist hates God and shakes his fist at the empty hole in the sky. And the more poetry I hear, the more I hate it, and the more I write it. Here I am. For the Berkeley Inn where I lived for 15 years being torn down. The wrecking ball swinging against the bricks as big as Crazy George's shaved head, when she took a heavy stick on full moon nights, banged on all the doors, and bellowed for quiet like a charging refrigerator. The cops always came when George had a quiet attack. Heavy shoulders, muscled neck. It took three of them to haul her off, and she was back the next morning. As the bricks tumble, she roars from the ruins, "Quiet! I said quiet, you assholes!" It's going down. The watching crowd gasps with each blow. It can't be fixed anymore. Not even Charlie can fix it. Charlie, the desk clerk mechanic whose wife ran off with a cop so he became a Stalinist. And the landlady fired him each time he got drunk, but she always hired him back because the elevator was in love with him and wouldn't work for anyone else. He had a dozen TV sets in his room that he took happily apart and put reluctantly back together. And he was kind to me. I look at the plaster dust. There should be records of that kindness set in plaster like fossil leaves. But it's all gone now. And Florence, the first landlady, skinny, tough, always furious. We said she'd run a whorehouse in Texas, which is the highest compliment tenants can give a landlady. She told me if I went out into some riot, she wasn't letting me back in. So, I stalked out, nobly collapsed from the tear gas, and Florence ran after me and dragged me back, more or less by my ear. I once saw her threaten to call the cops on a cop. As long as these walls stood, they knew her name, but one wall is down and the second is going. Now I have to write her name, and she never did think much of poetry. And Guy, one of the oldest desk clerks, much too deaf to work, but he wouldn't believe it. Someone would come and ask for a room, and Guy would turn purple and yell, "You can't call me that!" and reach for a nightstick under the desk, and whoever was backing him would take it gently away. Were we all crazy? Mainly we were friends, and with friends it's not a pertinent question. And there was the building itself. There'd been a banquet room once, closed before I moved in. There was a TV room where we all came and tried to spot ourselves on the news. There were 5 floors of hot plates, pot plants, parties, people overnight, and never enough toilet paper. There were cockroaches, of course, but very clean cockroaches. I had a room with 5 walls and a view of the hills. I thought I would live there forever, and I thought I would live forever. A pile of rubble with pigeons circling. But when I close my eyes, I still see that rug in the lobby, red, maroon, blue-looped, swirling. Everyone swore it was the first rug on acid. And I see the switchboard behind the desk, a tangle of beeping lines as the desk clerk snaps, "Hold on a sec! Just hold on!" And I'm holding. But it's hard. For the young men who died of AIDS. The dead lovers are almost as beautiful as razor-edged spaces in the air where they used to walk. Do you remember his hand lazily playing with the rim of a glass, making the ghost of a bell sound for his own ghost? And the talk didn't even pause. That glass is whole. Break it. Break it now. Break everything. How can people go on buying toothpaste and planning their summer vacations? Vegetables would care more. The potato has 1,000 eyes all morning for the lovers who lived in their deaths like a country foreign to everywhere for a long time before dying. A long time watching people look away, The potato only met them under the earth after their deaths, and still it wept, and we do not. The ghost bell makes barely a sound forever. The dead lovers are still in love, but no one else is. He took his hand with him. A grave is as good as a briefcase to keep the essentials in. A smile, bones, a way of biting at his lip just before looking into your eyes. Shoulder blades cutting into summer like butter. All the commuters in a rush hour traffic jam are cursing because the lovers are dying faster than their cars. The child sent to bed without dinner cries for the lovers, also sent to bed early and without. Unfair. Throw the dishes against the wall. Break them. The dead lovers are almost as beautiful as when they were alive. You can hear the rim of a glass tolling for the ghosts to come home. Break the glass. Break the ghosts. Pull down the sky. Break everything. Dance on the fragments. Scream their names. Get splinters of ghosts under your skin. Torn and bleeding because it hurts. Because it hurts so bad.
And that was Julia Vinograd, Eye of the Hand, Number of Poems. It's available if you want to get this stuff. She's up in Berkeley, California. This is from 1996. But if you leave a message on the Huff line after January 20th, I'll respond to you. Until then, however, Thomas Levitt will be fronting for all the Huff calls. Thomas, do you have a new phone number you're going to give out here, or an old phone number that in case people want to reach you?
I believe you put it on the Huff line, right?
It is on the Huff line.
Yeah, it's my cell phone is 831-295-3917.
Right.
And I may or may not pick up.
Right, but you will eventually respond to all callers?
Yes.
Crazed and otherwise?
Hopefully.
There was a pause there, folks. We'll have to examine your record on my return. I did get a call between times, and I'm waiting for a call back from a listener who wants to call in and make some comments of one sort or another. The irascible Chris Brazda will be calling in shortly. I believe he has a court date coming up on the 5th of January, which he may be talking about. Thomas, you don't have any court dates. Have you ever been to trial here in Santa Cruz? You've avoided the legal problems that some of us have been facing, right?
I have my own personal travails in that area.
Really?
I've had a... my wife has had an on-and-off custody battle with her ex that has led us into court several times. And I was advised by Justice Stevens that I should quit complaining, that it led to the court viewing me negatively about any complaints about the injustice of the situation.
I was actually thinking about, sleeping ban stuff and...
No, I haven't yet managed to get myself arrested or ticketed or anything else like that.
Disrupting a city council meeting. We have a caller. Let's see. Perhaps we have a caller who himself is a jailbird of one sort or another. Hi there, caller. You're on the air. Are you, in fact, a jailbird?
No, this is Chris Brazda.
Now, wait a minute, Chris. I know for a fact that you have gone to jail at different times.
Many times.
Indeed. So you are an habitué, or should we say a man who knows the Santa Cruz County Jail.
Many times. I've been there for speech crime, disturbing somebody's peace with my speech.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I've got four counts against me. Three of them are completely specious, which my peace was disturbed, and they arrested me. You know, I want to get to... trying to get to the Pottinger decision.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty clear that the court found that the sleep of the indigent, persecuting the sleep of the indigent with a law against it, is a violation of their life and liberty under the 14th Amendment and is cruel under the 8th Amendment. And as we've got 3,371 homeless in the county, or 1% of the population, it would behoove the attorneys to bring an injunction to stay the sleep deprivation ordinance in case of people who against whom this law is really breaking. You a person can only stand a certain amount of oppression, and then they break under, they die, actually. Half the homeless, I look at the morbidity stats, half the homeless are committing suicide. There's been 200 suicides since this law has been instituted by the 100% genuine counterfeit Marxist Dr. Michael Rackin, the professor of history of consciousness, who is the biggest advocate of the persecution of the unconscious, unavoidable unconsciousness of the homeless. It's a remarkable piece of work.
Well, let's you know, let's start with the Pottinger decision, because that's what you initially brought up, right?
Right.
I'm actually looking up Pottinger on the line. There's actually something more recent about it. Pottinger decision originally came out in 1991, and the final settlement was 1998. It's a decision out of a federal court by Clyde Atkins in Miami, Florida. And initially it set up safe zones, so-called safe zones, for homeless people in the sense that police were arresting them with some brutality and certainly a lot of lack of respect. And, of course, as you pointed out, and as is the case in Santa Cruz, they had no legal place to sleep, but yet they were being told they couldn't sleep anywhere, in essence. So they weren't. And this was construed by the rather liberal Clyde Atkins as being, as you say, a violation of the Eighth Amendment. I think there were a couple other amendments too you could violate.
The 14th, the right to life and liberty, the language directly from the Declaration of Independence.
Right, due process, the right to not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process
right.
of law. However, there was a settlement. The attorneys came away with most of the money, as you might expect, but some of it did go into homeless services, and in fact, the fact that the homeless were the police were enjoined from arresting a homeless person without having a shelter bed available acted as something of a deterrent, though not a hell of a lot, because what the police then did was they set aside a few beds that they always had available, and the people that they wanted to, who didn't obey their orders and didn't move along when they told them to, they would say, "Oh, we've got a bed for you, so we're gonna lock you up unless you come along."
Well, didn't they allow fields for people to sleep in?
Fields. Well, there were so-called safe zones that were set up until 1998 when the final decision was there were no more safe zones, but police could not approach a homeless person under a settlement with the ACLU there unless there was a bed available for them to use. And as I said, the police went around this by keeping a few beds available, and then whenever they really wanted to approach someone, they would whip out one of their beds, so to speak.
Well, then they would give the man a bed.
Yeah. They would claim they had one, and they would proceed in that way.
Did Florida make available fields for homeless to sleep in?
I'm sorry?
Did the Pottinger decision force the city of whatever that city was?
It didn't actually force them to do that, but it did in essence allow homeless people a much greater visibility, which prompted, I'm told, by interviews I had 3 or 4 years ago with social service providers there, prompted social service providers in the city council members and supervisors to apportion money for some shelters so they could get people out of sight. They didn't give a shit, as most of these people don't give a shit fundamentally, for addressing the basics of the problem. Just as in Santa Cruz, they're not interested in setting up a campground, couldn't care less about a car park or shelter, and are quite happy about continuing the sleeping and camping bans.
Well, it's not my job to say what they're not going to do. They should be forced by law
right.
to set up campers.
However, your concern has been, and I've heard you in different points because you leave voicemail messages aplenty, is that somehow the Pottinger decision is relevant here. It unfortunately is not binding in Santa Cruz. What is binding are worse court decisions by our own Ninth Circuit and or the U.S. Supreme Court, which really hasn't ruled on a camping case since Creative Clark versus CCNV in Washington, D.C. in the 80s, as I remember. So while it's sort of inspirational, the Pottinger decision, it doesn't persuade any attorneys that they're going to make any money out of taking a case. And unless you find somebody with a big heart, a big wallet, or something else,
lots of spare time,
you have a problem with, you know, getting attorneys to do this. It costs a lot of money to do what they did in the Pottinger case, and they had people who were willing to do it in the late 80s when the case originally hit the courts. That's the Pottinger case from my perspective.
Did Did the passenger case force the city in Florida to allow campgrounds?
It forced them to, first of all, allow so-called safe zones, and then to allow a tent city, and then to establish more facilities that they claimed were sufficient to cover the need for homeless people, hence no campgrounds were necessary. But in fact, I haven't got the latest update from Florida. If you want to start more researching on it and find out, I put through calls to the attorneys who ran the case, and they haven't gotten back to me. That was months ago. So I'm not sure what's going on. Thomas, any comments?
I would think, given that Glenn Maurer down in Santa Barbara, or is it San Luis Obispo?
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara has been like the single most successful litigant in these types of cases, that if his work hadn't precipitated a Pottinger-type decision here, and we're not likely to see one anytime soon.
See, I'm not a nattering nabob of negativism. I don't like to put any negative vibe out that as to what might not happen. I would like to sue this city for the grievous bodily and physical and psychological damages that their sleep deprivation is ordinances doing to 1% of the population. It's unbelievable to me that we can't get an attorney to take this on.
Mm.
Ed Fry offered to do it, and he said, bring me a plaintiff. So I recommended Hot Rod, who's been busted 5 or 6 times by Eric Seeley. How about getting Hot Rod and Ed Fry to take on Hot Rod? What's his name? Mr. Rappaport?
That's his name.
Rappaport.
John Rappaport.
As a plaintiff.
Or John Rapport, actually, is his name.
You know, I ask him, and I send email out. If I don't get a response, I can't tell.
Chris, there's a problem here. And the problem is that you seem to think that merely talking louder about this issue, more intensely and angrily about the issue to 2 or 3 attorneys who've already told you they're not interested.
No, that's not the case.
Well, I'm sorry. If they are interested, I'm happy. Are they interested?
Ed Fry told me to get a plaintiff.
You have to also have the right type of plaintiff, too, one that's reliable enough to continuously show up to court, that's going to be around and available through the whole case. And, you know, court cases also have an element of politics in them as well. So, you know, the ideal plaintiff is sympathetic and...
Or not.
What?
Do you want to get Ed Fry a plaintiff to stay?
We'd have to discuss it with him as to who the right plaintiff would be.
I don't believe Ed Fry is interested. And I think that if you can get Ed Fry to give Thomas a call, where he would say, I'm interested in doing that, that's fine. I disagree with you.
He's looking for a plaintiff.
My contacts with Fry and those two other attorneys that I've dealt with say they want, you know, they were not as for their own fees, but for the cost of these cases, they need lots of money to proceed. This is an as-applied challenge requiring expert testimony and requiring depositions and requiring a lot of stuff. I've said this to you before. I feel like I'm saying the same thing again and again on the air, Chris.
You know,
what's new?
20 years of work there, any of the horror stories, the sad stories of the homeless speaking into your tape recorder can become...
Not a single one of them will do any good. You need to have a specific form of signed... You need declarations from them, and you also need probably to depose the city officials involved, to ask them what their procedures are for dealing with the homeless. For example, in San Diego, that was the basis of the lawsuit before it stalled down there earlier this year. That's the short answer to the question, Chris. You know, I'm glad that you're enthusiastic about it. I hope you can, you know, work up some resources. So far, I haven't seen you do that, but if you can, great.
Well, the thing is, I hear you making a lot of hypothetical obstacles. I don't see
They're not hypothetical,
any...
Chris.
What?
They're not hypothetical. They're
no,
real.
I'm saying Ed Fry told me 2 months ago, get me a plaintiff.
Right. And so obviously what you need to do is present him with the plaintiff and see if it happens. But the fact of the matter is, I can almost assure you nothing will happen.
And why would you say that? You know, are you a man?
Oh, it might have something to do with, you know, I don't know, 19 years of experience making just those kinds of inquiries. But if you find differently, I would be the first to support you.
Are you a
nattering neighbor.
I'm not going to fight with you about it. What? If you find differently, I'll be the first to support you.
Can I respond?
Go ahead.
Are you a nattering nabob of negativism that makes hypothetical obstacles? You have to approach Ed Fry. I did. He said, bring me a plaintiff.
Why didn't you bring him a plaintiff?
I'm trying to.
It's taken you two. Hold it. Wait a minute. No. Ed Fry has a phone number. Hot Rod comes to the Huff meetings every week. I don't believe you that you can't have gotten Hot Rod to call Ed Fry in two months. And if you couldn't have done that, then he's not a good plaintiff.
No, I missed the meeting. There was a meeting, yesterday?
There are plenty of meetings. And it's not that you've missed the meeting. It's important. The important thing is that, frankly, these attorneys, while they have lots of, you know, positive sentiments, are not serious unless they see the cash on the barrelhead, not so much for their payment, but at least for the costs. And you have no understanding of the costs involved, Chris. That's the problem.
Okay, you got David Bovee to defend you for making a Nazi salute, which...
I didn't get him to defend me. He volunteered, okay?
Right.
He thought it was important enough to do that. Now, the fact that Chris Brosda wants to rush in and say something else is more important, which, by the way, it is, I agree with you.
Thank you.
Does not mean that he will do it. And
right.
However, Bovee and Kate Wells have both said, these are attorneys, and I'm really tired of this subject, frankly, Chris, because you're really barking up the wrong tree here, that, you know, they're interested if they can get the costs to do it. The costs run $15,000 to $20,000. Find yourself the money, and they might be interested. But you'll probably also have to find another $15,000 or $20,000, because even though they say they want to do it, the fact of the matter is that it goes on the bottom of their priorities list because they're paying clients come first. Now, that's the bottom line. I don't want to talk about it at great length. Make your comment, and then let's move on, can we?
Okay. I think we can move David Bovee and Kate Wells to get an injunction to stay the sleep deprivation.
I don't. I disagree with you. And if you can do that, go ahead and do it. Okay? I worked on this quite a while. I suggest finding other attorneys, finding some financial resources, and or mobilizing homeless people at the grassroots level, because that's when attorneys get interested. If they see bunches of homeless people getting together and are doing their own tent city and saying, fuck you, city, if you are not willing to provide at least protection from legal punishment for doing what I need to do every night, then we're going to stand together. And that's happened in the past in Santa Cruz.
I agree. They should do that. We should do that.
Right. But the fact is, you have to be able to work with people to do it. They have to trust you. They have to enjoy working with you, or at least find some common ground. And that can be difficult, both for you and for me. Any comments, Thomas?
Not really.
Okay.
Any final words, Chris? Because I'm going to roll on.
The race for the U.S. House opens tomorrow, the filing period. I need to get 3,006 signatures. I'll be at the elections clerk to get the petitions, and then I'll be in front of coffee shops in downtown Santa Cruz tomorrow morning and the afternoon getting petitions if anybody wants to help me on this.
And on January 5th, you'll be in court defending yourself or trying to get be able to act as your own attorney in four misdemeanor charges, right?
Well, I'll act insofar as I want to exercise my right to speak without having my attorney usurp it.
Right, I understand that. But unfortunately, in the courts here locally, that has never been allowed. You either have to defend yourself, and I think I've said this on the radio before to you, or your attorney speaks for you. You cannot have co-counsel in that way, almost invariably.
Well,
I've never seen a case locally, particularly a case involving a poor person, where that's been allowed.
We see in Iraq that the defendant, Saddam Hussein, is speaking on his own behalf, and that's allowed in Iraqi courts.
Right, and you can speak on your own behalf, but they won't give you a lawyer here in Santa Cruz to do it as well.
No, Hussein has Ramsey Clark, who's the LBJ's...
Unfortunately, they're not under U.S. law over there. They have their own law, and frankly, that's a show trial, as both of us know. But beside that, I'm talking about California, Santa Cruz courts. That's my experience. If you find otherwise, I would be actually pleased and surprised.
Well, I'm trying to get as much freedom for the defendant to speak on his own behalf in California courts as Saddam Hussein has in Iraqi courts.
Right. I don't know if that's the best precedent, but I would still like to see that precedent established. And I'll tell you, you haven't got a chance in hell as far as I would guess, but I wish you luck with that.
Well, as I said, I don't like to put out a negative vibe. That's not my job.
I understand. But my job is to be accurate and assess what I think is a realistic prospect so that I don't delude other people listening that it's a reasonable sense.
If you want to accomplish something, you have to foreclose a possibility of failure. You know this?
Well, you know, I have been accused sometimes of being too negative, but in this case, I'm just giving you my experience.
Okay, and to Tom. Now, Tom, I asked you twice. Dr. Rankin is a phony Marxist. Do you agree?
What?
Dr. Rankin is a phony Marxist.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Thanks. I mean, you can't be a Marxist and persecute the sleep of a class of people.
I never disagreed with that. My only statement was that Mike Rodkin, as a politician and a technical execution of the act of running for office, is a very unquestionably highly skilled, and is able to demonstrate that by being able to compact a significant amount of information into a 30-second soundbite much more effectively than myself, Steve Argue, or almost any other of the candidates who ran against him. That is my only positive comment about him, and it's purely an observation of his technical abilities. Nothing to do with his policies, his beliefs, or admiration for exercise of leadership on the city council.
Okay, we started with the Pottinger. We're ending with Rodkin. Sum it up, Chris, because I'm rolling.
Celebrating his duplicity, because how can you persecute the sleep of an economic system you go up to the university and purport to want to overthrow? How can you
I don't want to spend any time talking about Rodkin. I think we all agree he's full of shit on the homeless issue.
Well, I never use that homonym.
I do. And I think that's in essence what you mean, whether you say it or not. But anyway, I don't want, I mean, you know, you called in to talk about Pottinger. We did. Finish it up, because I want to go.
Okay. I'll be out on the street tomorrow getting signatures. 3,006 signatures are necessary by February 23rd. I expect I'll get them. Anyone want to help me? I'll be online. You can call me, email me, simabuse, C-I-M, as in math, A-B-U-E, at mindspring.com. And I'm at 464-0501.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
All right. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. You can also jump on pages incolor.com. I'm actually going to look at it for the first time. I'm the only one on there. Come on, everybody. Jump on pagesincolor.com and say hello. Or call in 427-3772. Thomas is going to be needing your calls on Sunday. He will be handling this whole board on his lonesome, 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. Thomas, are you ready for that job?
Indeed I am.
Look a little tired at that prospect. Here's a street interview, and unless you have any commentary you want to make about anything you've heard so far or anything. Actually, let me play a little street interview. I did have a tape full of interviews, which seems to have disappeared. So I want to apologize to folks I've spoken to in the last 3 or 4 days, because it looks like those interviews aren't going to happen for at least 3 weeks. And after that, there's even some question there. We have a caller again. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
I appreciated how you dealt with the past caller, Mr. North.
Ah, this sounds like a man from Greater Deutschland calling in.
Perhaps. I was inspired by the poem of
Julia Vinograd.
I remember your book. So you're turning the reins to your trusty cohort, Thomas, for a while?
Yes, Thomas is taking over for a couple of weeks, and I will be back. I'm going on vacation.
My goodness.
Yes.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
First time in ages, no doubt.
Well, even an old character like myself needs an occasional, tune-up, so to speak.
Well, it's cold here, and it's snowing, and the homeless people in France and Germany are suffering.
Now, what town are you calling from there, caller?
Well, it's somewhere in Deutschland.
Yeah.
I'm.
Are there a lot of homeless people in your town, caller?
No. It's a small town, and they...
What's the population?
They seem to find the larger cities
Well, is this because, I mean, do you have, I know we have a small town here, too. I mean, I take it your town's about 50,000 people, something like that?
Not even that.
Oh, no. Really? Smaller. Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, here we have, of course, 55,000 or so. And as you know, because I know you visited this town, you, I pointed out to you we have this bizarre set of laws which criminalize or give the police great powers to criminalize people in public spaces. How does it go with the police in the town in Germany where you live?
Well, I guess if there were homeless people here, it would be they wouldn't be treated quite so brutally as I gather there's a case in Santa Cruz.
Why do you say that?
It's just my experience.
So you mean you yourself have dealt with the police and you've seen them dealing with poorer people?
Well, I haven't dealt with the police in that regard since many, many eons ago in Boston, Massachusetts, when I, too, was jailed, as apparently your previous caller was, too.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a different story.
Right, but I
mean... Anyway, let me congratulate you on your vacation. Where are you heading?
South America.
Oh, I sort of thought Vancouver, but I guess this time of year, why not? Well, so you're back when?
Be back in 2.5 weeks.
Oh, well, I wish you all the best.
Hey, thank you.
Glad I caught you.
Yeah,
like your program.
No, well, keep listening and keep talking, and do let me know about police practices in Europe. A lot of us can learn from how, you know, the medical system operates in Europe, and how, I don't know, how immigration, I guess, is we're adopting rather.
Yeah, well, no, I'll look into that very question and report back to you.
Right.
Have a good vacation.
Hey, thank
you.
Bye bye. Phone lines are open, national and international, to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That's the show you're listening to. We are, of course, at 101.1 and freakradio.org. And the phone number here is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. Off-air number for the next couple weeks, your best bet is to, you can try the Huff line first. That's a voicemail, 423-4833. But better than that is to contact Thomas directly, 295-3917, is that right?
295-3917, 831 area code.
295-3917. If you forget the number, it is on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, so you just have to kick in another 50 cents to get it, but you can if you want. I do have a street interview or two in spite of the missing interviews, which no doubt will turn up in 6 months or something, a sad moment. But so let me roll into those. Again, if you have off-air messages for me, you can leave them on the Huff line for the next day or two, but after that I won't be picking them up until after January 20th or so, 423-4833. If you want to be a member of Free Radio Santa Cruz, if you want more information about Free Radio, if you want to give us a PSA, public service announcement, you want to kick down some cash, or maybe you got some old equipment around the house, all that stuff. The number for all those inquiries or all that kind of possibility, letting us know what's happening, is 427-4523, 831-427-4523. Or you can go to the Free Radio website, www.freakradio.org, or you can mail a hefty check to Post Office Box 7507 Santa Cruz, Post Office Box 7507 Santa Cruz, 95061. So that's Free Radio can always use it. The feds are currently going after medical marijuana in San Francisco and San Diego and other places in California. And I haven't heard of attacks on Free Radio stations recently, but then again, perhaps the V-Man or Skidmark or others know more about these things and have done reports that I have not heard. But we have been attacked. We were attacked a year ago approximately at this time. All our equipment was taken. We're back. People come up to me occasionally and say, hey, you know, boy, you're back on the air. And I said, yeah, we came back immediately. And we did that because of the response of the community, the fact that people wanted us back on the air. And little as I listen to other shows in my own, and I should listen to more shows because there's really a lot of great stuff on this station. Boy, I sound like a fucking public service, public broadcasting kind of person, commenting during a telethon, but I'm just often impressed that I'm not talking about Democracy Now, per se, although I enjoy listening to it. I'm not talking about regular lefty shows. I'm talking about stuff that comes up just out of the blue on free radio. That's just striking. If you appreciate it, support it. That's my suggestion. Again, the number to call, 427-4523. And the number to call if you want to talk on the studio, in the studio, or should we say coming into the studio, it's 427-3772. Okay, well, it's about 4:10 on December 29th, 2005, here in front of the New Leaf Market, talking with... a man who got a citation for essentially a radio playing music on the sidewalk?
Yeah, I got a ticket just for having a radio playing at a very low volume. Uh-huh. And I got a ticket. It's a $370 fine just for having a little ghetto blaster going.
And how long ago? So you got a citation where you were doing... You're a street performer, right?
Yeah. I'm curious about getting...
You're a little anxious about retaliation by police, so we're going to kind of conceal... I'm not guaranteed it's going to do a great job of disguising you, but you were concerned about this because you don't feel that your radio is was unusually loud or anything, right?
Yeah, it wasn't outlandishly loud. I was playing old, like, Beatles songs, real mellow stuff, lower than I'm talking right now, or whatever. And that's, I knew there was an old law about it being legal to under a talking voice, you know, natural, more than 25, 30 feet away. If you can't hear it further than that, it's legal.
Yeah, the actual code section is a sound amplification permit is required under 9.40.010, except when there's you're dealing with a radio, a record player, a TV, or a tape recorder when used, when the volume, quote, does not exceed the volume of normal conversational speech. So apparently there was some merchant who didn't like your radio, right, because that was the response, right?
I think, I'm not sure, but I think there was a tie-in, but I'd been... warned three times by this one cop, or two, three times by him, to turn the radio off. Same thing. It was never very on, very loud. He would just come up.
To turn it down, but to turn it off.
Yeah. And then I asked him, this last time when I got the ticket, I said, but what about the law about 25 or 30 feet? And he said, that's not there anymore. He just said, that's not true. He denied it, that's the law.
Well, this law does not specify the number of feet, but it does say normal conversational volume.
Yeah, right. He just said any radio of any kind playing without a permit, which I don't know how much it is, but just...
Yeah, that's there might be your solution if you can get the judge to agree with you, since you can't get a jury, and this is an infraction.
Yeah.
But apparently an expensive infraction, $370, right?
Yeah, $370, and I just... But what really gets me is the guys with the boom stereos in their cars, the high-tech stereos. Every other car going up the street's got a high-tech stereo shaking the ground. You know what I mean, though? And they don't appear to be getting them any tickets. I mean, most of the time, they don't even bother them. They just, like, outlandishly loud. You know what I mean? Shaking the ground, saying... If anybody knows rap, I mean, serious stuff. I mean, gangster rap, you know, just...
Right. You said partially this came from the police officer. You think from you being a rookie, but you also, I think, and by the way, we have used your real name on the air before, and we've actually talked about this incident on the air before. So I don't know how much protective cover you're going to have, but you intend to fight this in court?
Yeah, I do. Well, I don't know how many other people they did it to. And the same thing even, like, for electric music, too. If it's barely on, you're practicing or something, you're not bothering anybody. I've gotten tickets for electric guitar with it not even on. Just the amp sitting next to me with my electric guitar, not even on. Just came up, and that was it.
Now, you said you kind of have a history. In the old days when you were playing, you actually got your guitar broken by police?
Yeah, I got a succession of tickets in the early 80s for the electric guitar. And
in Santa Cruz.
And then you asked about the guitars. Yeah, one time they got so fed up with me because I just wouldn't leave. And they'd give me tickets, and I didn't have any money to pay the ticket. I just kept coming back. I didn't care. It was sort of like, what are you going to do, bury me, you know, or shoot me? So I kept coming back, and finally I'm up to a bunch of tickets. And one night they just grabbed my guitar. I think I was, like, drinking some beer somewhere behind a building or something. They saw me, and they said, oh, there he is. And they just, like, they took my electric guitar, just threw it up in the air. It was a $700 Stratocaster, nice Strat. Kind of beat up now, and they cracked the whole neck. It just completely ruined the guitar. And then I lucked out. I go walking up and down the street, just screaming Bloody Mary, for up and down the streets, screaming bloody murder about it for a couple of days. Just run out, walking up down the street with it in a box, you know, the guitar. And some old guy comes up to me, old hippie guy, walks up and goes, "And what happened?" I told him. He offered to fix the guitar. He redid the whole neck, like about $500 worth of work. He redid the neck, he glued it, he refretted it. Then all of a sudden I appeared back in front of the catalyst again with my guitar, electric. About a week or two later, they didn't know what to think. They looked at me like I was some kind of ghost, you know. But it was weird. They left me alone for a long time. You know, I mean, maybe they just thought, I don't know, the Twilight Zone's here or something. But it's irrational. I mean, it should be about volume, not about... It should be a... there is another catch. Is that the Pacific Trading Company...
Ah, my favorite group.
I believe is involved here because I was near, adjacent to them. And this woman, from day one, has never liked my electric guitar.
The Heinrichs?
Never liked my radio on at any volume. Or me in front of there, and I was kind of near there. And she just, I remember distinctly the cop saying something about a report. There was a report about the radio. Just it was simply was on.
Well, of course, the Pacific Trading Company was responsible for setting a fence around the whole area. It used to have a sittable planter, and now it's, you have to sit, you know, you get an interesting stimulation in the various parts of your body if you sit down there. And, of course, I was actually sited under the same section as you, for amplified sound, because I had a television set where we were showing a video of Sergeant Baker harassing a disabled man on the sidewalk. And again, it was the Pacific Trading Company owners, I believe, who complained they didn't like the sound. And we took the case to trial, and we lost, even though... A TV is an exception, and so is a tape recorder. They claimed that we had an additional amplifier, which we did, but it was part of the TV setup. So it was, and also it was clearly a First Amendment activity. It was a TV on the sidewalk, which people were watching. And they hadn't really asked us to turn it down. There had been no complaint.
No warning, yeah.
No warning either. So it was clearly an attempt to punish us for not simply responding to the snap of the fingers of the police officer, who in this case was not just Sergeant Baker, but
wow.
He had a variety of underlings who were there doing some similar stuff. And myself and a guy called Jim Ross got cited for that in the summer of 2003.
How'd it go?
Well, as I said, we were found guilty. Actually, Ross beat the ticket because they wanted me. They didn't want him. He took responsibility for it, but they wouldn't believe him. And they dismissed his case, and they put me up, and I was eventually found guilty and had to do community service. So, of course, I gave out flyers in front of the Pacific Trading Company as my form of community service.
Great. Have you rehabilitated yourself?
Yes, and I attempted to. Well, I was trying to rehabilitate the Pacific Trading Company and the police department. An impossible task.
Yeah, Pacific Trading Company, have they been sued? I believe they've had indicted or anything?
On that, I don't know. I've not heard.
Speech. I heard about a freedom of speech class.
Well, they...
whatever you call it, some kind of indictment against them for infringing on someone's freedom of speech, I believe.
Well, I know that we protested them for... And had petitions at a table in front of their place for...
I was there.
Three or four weeks. Because of... And there was some chalking on the sidewalk. And there was... But there was a general feeling, you know, we videoed the debates that we had with them. And the problem was that, you know, I was concerned with the anti-homeless laws. The main reason they wanted it was get rid of performers like yourself, as well as poor people, panhandlers, you name it, anybody who they feel... detracted from their uptown business, their upscale business.
Yeah, it seems like the store's got a real attitude, and I just feeling kind of intimidated in that area. Other people do too. You can't really relax, and just anti-Santa Cruz, you ask me.
If you decide you want some protesting there, let me know. We'll whip out a flyer.
Sounds good to me.
All right. We've been talking with
Looney Balloony.
You know who he is now, folks. Now, go get him, boys. And that's kind of encouraging. That conversation happened about 2 hours ago, and as you heard, originally Looney did not want to say who he was. He felt intimidated. But in speaking about the situation, he felt encouraged. And, you know, there's always a chance. I think police officers, some of them, sometimes do listen to this show. And it's also archived for those of you who want to listen to it again at huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz.org. Thanks to the wizardry of Thomas Belode and Thomas Levitt, our co-host here in the studio.
Thomas is about to fall asleep. So unless somebody phones in a question, we may have a sleep crime in progress in about 4 hours. Actually, he's in a residence. I'm not going to give you exactly the exact secret location. But Thomas, how's it going?
Well, if you hear loud snoring noises.
Indeed. I myself will call the authorities just to be sure you don't disgrace your whole family. I'm looking on the website of, actually, it's, what is it? It's, I Googled for LA homeless lawsuit, and I got on LA's homeless blog, and there is such a thing, ACLU's lawsuit against the city was heard yesterday being December 6, 2005, some weeks ago. And the story is this. Yesterday, a federal appeals panel heard arguments from a lawyer for the ACLU of Southern California stating that the city of Los Angeles ordinances against sleeping, lying, or sitting on public sidewalks is illegal if there are not enough shelter beds. This lawsuit was filed back in February 2003. It is amazing how long it takes to process a lawsuit, especially when it affects the lives of people sleeping on the streets. The three-judge panel will issue a decision in the near future. I don't think they have, or I would have heard of it, but perhaps they have. Many are upset that the ACLU is suing the city, basically allowing homelessness to persist on the streets, that is to say, affirming the right of people to use public spaces if they're homeless in the absence of shelter beds. This, of course, is what I've been championing for years in Santa Cruz. Some have called it a sort of pro-homelessness approach. In fact, it is an approach that favors the civil liberties of everyone, particularly those who need them the most, people who are homeless and outside. The ACLU perspective is that there are not enough shelters for the homeless, that the city has an obligation to house its homeless. The reality is that without enough shelter beds, people will continue to sleep on the streets, whether the ACLU sues the city or not. The timing of the panel hearing is also interesting. ACLU executive director goes before the Los Angeles City Council next Wednesday, or apparently did, because the story written was on December 7th. They will be voting on her appointment by the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority Commission. And the guy says he's sure the lawsuit will be dismissed, or I should say discussed there. Now, I'm going to read a longer story about this in a moment, but I know that earlier we spoke with Chris Brozda on the subject. He's very passionate. He's written a lot about it. And frankly, Chris has been a protester on this subject for years, and very articulate and very intense, as well as sometimes, in my mind, chaotic, angry, and counterproductive. But that's the downside. The upside is he keeps pushing the issue. And with respect to that, we have an ACLU in town.
Yes, I was just thinking
what the contrast is between the Los Angeles,
yes,
ACLU, where they're actually, the point may be that in Los Angeles, homelessness is bigger business. I mean, they have a thing called the LA Coalition Against Hunger and Homelessness down there. There's bucks coming in for homeless services aplenty, and also for homeless advocacy. Here in Santa Cruz, there isn't much. There's some charity money going into and grant money going into the Armory program, and I guess there was going into the family shelter, the Rebelle family shelter, which we've heard complaints from homeless on this show is almost virtually empty. There's very few people in it. It's hard to get into. There's all kinds of strictures. But you don't get much money locally for homeless advocates. Hence, it's not really profitable, and the ACLU doesn't want to ruffle the feathers of the homeless, well, the city council. The city council, as we know, has made a decision pretty much that it's a forbidden issue. They don't want to get into it other than maybe kick down some more dollars to extend the armory on occasion. We have a caller. But to have an ombudsperson, to consider a real campground, to consider civil rights abuses by the police department, they ain't interested. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Thomas and Robert.
Oh, hi, Robert and Thomas. This is Bob Patton.
Hey, Bob.
Human Rights Organization. And I promised you I'd give you some update information on that story I heard about the Ventura legal campground.
Oh, there's a legal campground in Ventura. You mentioned that at the Huff meeting.
I did, and I didn't have enough information to really give you any background on it because I was led to the story when I did a search about homeless on Google and found about a homeless death in the area that did turn out to be a natural death. But in that story was exposed that in Ventura there was a I went ahead and did a little bit additional research, and I think the best information is to go to the City of Ventura website, because it's a state park supported campground with 30-day stay for up to 30 people at the Emma Wood State Beach Group Campground of west of Ventura. And I don't have anything much more on that except to say you can do a web search on that and get much more information.
You know, of course, there was a thing once here called the Coral Street Open Air Shelter in 1995, also known as the Back 40, which is now occupied by the buildings which are the Page Smith Community House sort of recovery program. And that used to be a tent city for the homeless between 93 and 95, particularly in 95, when the homeless demanded the right to keep their tents up during the day. And the... When Rotkin and Kennedy, who were then the prime movers on the city council, destroyed that camp city, the tent city, in collusion with Paul Merceau, Paul Pfotenhauer, Paul Lee, Karen Gillette, and all the social service providers and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the Free Meal Program, because they didn't like it was the winter. And instead of providing more porta potties, instead of letting them use the bathrooms that were next door, within 100 feet, at the homeless what was the homeless community resource center, now the homeless service center, they called in the media and said, "Look at all these overflowing toilets. This campground's got to go." And
that's because there really was no support from the city or the parks. I mean, I only visited that area.
Right. I mean, there was
once or twice.
There
now,
was there
with
was
this with this.
Well, let me finish what I'm saying.
Sure, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I mean, my point was that once they destroyed this back 40, in order to cover their tracks, Rotkin and Kennedy bussed 40 or 45 homeless people that wanted to go out to the New Brighton Beach area.
Oh yeah, I helped with that.
You may
bit.
Remember where they under Michael Sheridan and other people who
right.
were another homeless man they. They set up camp there for 2 weeks before they all dispersed, and they were able to get some donations, and the community was quite generous, and some of them stayed on in the campground. That was until the state park system, particularly in Santa Cruz, made the remarkable decision that not only can you stay only for 2 weeks per month, but you can only stay for a month total in Santa Cruz per year.
Right.
It's an unusual decision, and as I understand
30 days... You can spend 30 days in any combination of state parks in the county, and no more than 2 weeks in any one location.
But I don't think any other county has that provision.
That was a new provision put in place by Santa Cruz. I don't know what other counties are doing.
I understood it was unique to Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And I know that Sherry Connable and Barbara Riverwoman, two homeless activists who are still around, though Barbara is no longer, as far as I know, doing active homeless activism. Sherry, to some extent, is. She writes occasional articles for Street Spirit.
Yeah. Well, once again, there was...
They pushed the Santa Cruz City Council to fund this in the way that apparently Ventura... Do we have any notion as to whether Ventura is actually funding homeless people to take these campsites? Or
I don't see anything immediately on that. What I do see is a comment by the city manager, Rick Cole, stating that this temporary campground... will have the full support of the city, of the Ventura City. Personally work with the group, and that group is called the Turning Point Foundation. We'll work with that group, produce a plan for a safe, secure, and clean camp. The city would be willing to pay some of the cost. There we go.
Here's a story from the City of Ventura Homeless Services. Homeless Leave Beach Camp, Tuesday, January 18, 2005, so it was the last year, actually it was this year, the very beginning of this year. Kay Porter, 41, was living in her truck before she found refuge. Well, I should probably read this to you. Are you able to hear the show on the air? Have been listening, or are you just calling in sort of out of the...
I'm listening to... I don't have the radio on now because you have that delay.
Right, but you are listening.
this is dated, what I'm looking at, the Homeless Service Center, City of Ventura, article from the Ventura County Star by Ken, I'm going to spell it, C-L-E-R-I-C-I, is available, and what did I use as a search? I think I used Ventura Homeless Tent Camp is what I used as a search.
Give me the last name again of Ken.
Cole. Of who, Ken?
The last name of the author that you just...
Oh, I have to hang on a second. I'll get back. The author was named Kevin.
Kevin,
I'll spell it. C-L-E-R-I-C-I.
Okay, I'm trying to Google for him. Here we go. Ventura County Star, Oxnard.
Correct.
And it's a story from, well, there's a couple of them. December 27th, 2000. Well, no, that's not the...
I have a December 5th one here, Sunday.
Let's see what we got here. Ventura County Star. You got to register to get into the Ventura County Star.
Yeah, that's why I went to the city of Ventura on my search. It showed that they had the article there.
Okay, good. Yeah, I noticed that is part of that. Yeah, I'm getting the homeless leave the beach site. So apparently there are, let's see, each day is a challenge. City-sanctioned homeless camp.
There
of,
it is.
Of Emma Woods State Beach, where the Porters have lived since December with some two dozen others. No extension was granted by state parks officials who said their hands were tied. So campers slog through the mud and muck to break down their tents and collect their few belongings. So this is kind of like what Santa Cruz did. Santa Cruz... the city of Santa Cruz, when pressed to do this by Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connival and others, I think I was also supportive of this, although it seemed what they were really doing was they were saying, take these people and put them in a state park outside the city, and the city will actually fund it, but we don't want to provide a campground space, although they had campgrounds within the city. There was a campground out about... It was right past Highway 1 and River Street, about four or five streets down. It's called Bob's Pine Grove Campground. And it was actually available. The city could have rented it. They could have eminent domained it. They could have done any number of things and made it available to homeless people. But they didn't want to do that. Instead, they wanted to throw people into the state parks campground, which, of course, resulted, because it's a more conservative area out there, in both the impression that the city wasn't dealing with its own problems, that they were sending out a bunch of problematic homeless people into a state park. Many homeless people do try to use the state parks with difficulty because of the burdens thrown by the state park system. But in Santa Cruz, and it sounds like in Ventura too, they don't want to address their own problems, so they try to throw them into another jurisdiction.
Yeah, well, what we were looking at and finding out this information is trying to support or at least understand the process of building a legal campground for homeless people. So I thought this would be a good resource to follow and to maybe even go down and check it out. If someone go down and check it out, see what's happening.
Well, it's possible.
The Human Rights Organization, I think we're going to start addressing the possibility of doing some camp here in Santa Cruz. So we want to be able to look and see what either positive or negative things are going on now,
right, I think that's
in California or on the West Coast.
That's a great idea. I guess the Human Rights Organization, which will be meeting, I guess you're not planning to be at the next Tough meeting, right? The next Tough meeting would be January, what is it, early next Wednesday, but I guess there's not going to be meetings for three or four. Are you planning to hold Tough meetings yourself? Because I know that you're a Huffster. Are you going to be holding those Human Rights Organization?
Yeah, every Saturday, except on... not on this coming Saturday of New Year's Eve day, but our next meeting will be the 7th of January. May have a little bit of information on the proposals to help put a camp together here, legal, hopefully, and build support. What the heck, maybe it's time to do a protest, and we'll have an illegal campground and just deal with it, huh?
Right. Well, that's what I've always suggested people do in the winter is they set up tents outside City Hall. I mean, the last time that was done really was in 1989 when there was a proposal for a safe sleeping zone. The Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, headed by Sherry Connable and Margaret Marr, tried to do that. and they've been promised heaven by Kennedy and Wormhout and Laird and all these city council members who then turned their backs on them. The Conable and Marr held the campground for about 10 days. And then the rest of us, Huff members, tried to continue to move it on. The minute that the respectables left, the police moved in on us, and they began arresting and ticketing. So, you know, yeah, but it's still, it was how Dignity Village developed in Portland, Oregon, from an illegal
exactly.
campground.
Yeah, I don't want to be discouraged, but I definitely want to understand the ramifications of doing such a thing. It won't be the first time that I've worked both inside and outside of the box, as your guest last week was encouraging us to do. When it comes to the homeless issues and then getting homeless people involved on their own, you know, as being in the forefront. So that's one of the things. Maybe we even call the camp outside of the box or something. Huh?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously the best time to do it is in the winter, in the sense that it's most needed. Although what they'll throw out at you is that there's an armory program that they've gotten extended for 2 months through April and May into June. And so what are you complaining about? There's spaces in the armory.
Oh, of course.
Right.
And what about the other 15,000 to 200 homeless?
1,500 to 2,000?
Yeah, 1,500 to 2,000. Sorry, I missed the numbers up.
Right, right.
Any emergency shelter for them? No. What do we get? $90 fines, midnight wake-ups, you know,
right.
police searches.
Right.
Jail, arrest? Oh, please, come on.
Yeah, just
anyways.
just a general reduction of the value of human beings and how they're treated.
Yeah.
So the Human Rights Organization has a website, right?
Exactly, and that website is humanrightsorg.org. And, of course, the same as www. At the beginning, the www.humanrightsorg. One word, .org.
And your phone number if people want to reach you?
And that number is 831-425-4467. Hey, thanks for the promotion there.
Sure, 425-4467 to get in touch with the Human Rights Organization. No
right.
meeting this Saturday, but the week from Saturday, I guess that'll be on the 7th or something,
the
7th, or the 6th.
Saturday the 7th, and that's 145 to 245 at the Homeless Service Center.
Right.
And that's 115 Coral Street.
Or set up your own tent city, and the Human Rights Organization will sniff you out.
There you go.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Robert, and hope you have a really good vacation. And take a look for me if you can find any of those Clint Eastwood ponchos I was looking for.
Aye, hombre. I'll do what I can.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'll try and do that.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This is Bath Robespierre's Broadsides. The Who Knows What Thomas Levitt will be calling the show when he comes in on Sunday. He might invent some entirely new thing. This could become some kind of upper-class discussion of bizarre who knows what. I mean, Thomas is a real wild card, and who knows if we can... You'll find out on Sunday what kind of a show he's running. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello there. I have a report about the armory.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I just talked to a homeless friend who...
What's your name, caller?
It's Valerie.
Hey, Valerie.
Yeah, just got turned down from the armory tonight just because they decided now that they want you to only have a backpack and they don't want you to have any extra things just because of one person who just happened to be carrying a bottle of alcohol that they caught. And now, they, without any notice, they are turning people down if they carry anything extra than just one backpack.
And
it's bad enough getting a place to sleep tonight, and now they're turning you down if you have a few extra things.
So what did this guy have that was additional to his backpack?
A guitar.
Well, you know, music can be construed as a form of violating the peace, so perhaps... If he simply checked his guitar at the door, he could... I guess they won't allow him to do that either, will they?
Well, that's the thing I'm wondering is why they didn't just take some of the things. They were actually turning people away tonight because they had too many things. We're talking about a winter's night with very little room as it is. This friend of mine is actually sick tonight. We'd like to have a place to sleep. It's really ridiculous. Speaking of human rights...
Well, did he say that anyone else was turned away?
Yeah.
How many others were turned away?
I don't know. But I know that other people, one guy was ranting and raving about it, making a big deal because, you know, just because all of a sudden they just decided to change the rules without any warning, you know, this guy was pissed. And I think he had a good right to be.
I would suggest that listeners call 420-5020, which is the city council number, and leave a message demanding that something be done about this and that the city council person call back. I think actually Cynthia Matthews' number, I think it's 420-5023, but if that's not Cynthia Matthews, it's Rotkin, who's the real mayor anyway.
Well, I'd like somebody to call up and prove to me that it'd be worth doing this, because as far as I'm concerned, I think the bunch of people are just going to lay authority stuff on. They're going to say, oh, we didn't do it, cover it up, and they're going to figure out ways to run their little rules around and run these people around like rats in a little cage.
Well, that's certainly you know, something to, I mean, you're you know, one can't say that won't happen, and that often is what does happen. But I think the only remedy for that is louder, stronger voices saying that this is wrong.
Yeah, but you know, what is wrong? It's like,
well,
you
what is wrong?
Pick a couple of little things they think. They don't take it very seriously.
What is wrong is obviously what you say that people.
I know, but they don't care.
Well, all you do is you simply call up, and this is what I encourage people to do: is call up and say to, you know, 420-5023, I've just heard the Armory is turning away people because they have more than a backpack. I would like to know what you expect people to do, and I want to call back. And this what this will do is they may ignore you, but they begin to get anxious, and so they start calling up the Armory and saying, what's going on? You know, they're calling us. I'm not saying they won't find some bullshit way to avoid the issue, but the more pressure you put on them and the more people feel that there's solidarity, also, the more people will speak up about it. So
I just wanted to say that I really appreciate Thomas standing in for Robert and helping keep fighting for our rights and the homeless in this town and being here, and I hope that he can get some support because, you know, we're going to miss you, Robert, and we want to really be there for Thomas and give him a lot of support, and this is a tough thing to have to take over a big deal like this. What you've been doing is a really great thing, and we appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Goller.
I will do my best, and I encourage people to make their best effort to call in and contribute news and information and their points of views, and we can have a discussion about these issues. And
well, thanks a lot, Thomas. Appreciate your support.
Hey, thank you.
All right. So everybody call that number. What's that number again, Robert?
You know, the number, there's actually, I had an even better idea, I think, but I mean, that number is a good number to call, 420-5023. But remember, Mike Rotkin is in the phone book. His home phone number is in the phone book.
Everybody call up.
I would say that on a cold night when people are being turned away from the Armory, it's appropriate to call a city council member to say, gee, Mike, and it's not like in the middle of the night, it's 15 after 7 right now, what the hell is going down? So if somebody wants to, I don't have a phone book here in the studio, if somebody wants to get me Rotkin's phone number, I'll call him at home and ask him what's happening with this and ask him if he's prepared to try to address this issue. Particularly if you're sure, you're telling me that more than one person was turned away from the Armory for having a backpack plus?
Having more than a backpack, yeah.
Right. Well, I think that's something that, of course, what Rotkin will need to do is he'll need confirmation of it, and no doubt most of the people who could confirm this don't have cell phones, right?
I think that they'll be lucky if they have any more than a backpack.
Right. Well, somebody get me Rotkin's home phone number. We'll give him a call on the air and ask him what's going on with this.
Wow. So you could look that under the residential section, huh?
I would think so. Rotkin. Rotkin.
There it is. Michael Rotkin. Everybody call up.
What you got?
423-4209.
423-4209. Let's give Mike a call and see what's happening. Thank you, caller.
Sure.
All righty.
Bye.
Can we call the Armory?
Who
runs that program?
It's the state. Well, it's a combination of the Homeless Services Center and the state manage it together. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on free radio. Call back. We actually have another phone line. I'm going to call it on the other phone line, so you will not be you will be able to call in while we're trying to call out to Mike Rotkin, and I'm going to do that now. Although he's not the mayor, I think Cynthia Matthews would have a stroke if I called her at home, so I'm going to call Mike Rotkin, and we're going to see how this works here. There we're phoning Mike at home, and we'll see if he answers. It is often you get an answering machine when you call Mike at home. That's the third call.
Greetings. You've reached 423-4209. For
Mike Rotkin,
please press pound 2 now. For Madeline, press pound 3. And for Court.
Leave your message.
Hi, Mike. This is Robert Norris calling you. Actually, I'm on free radio as I do. And, you know, I don't normally call you at home. But I just received a caller who told me that the armory has turned away at least two men for having more than a backpack and a new rule that apparently was, according to this caller, initiated tonight. So that means people are outside in the cold without a space to go. And frankly, I'm a little concerned about the city's legal liability here. I mean, after all, if your city services are turning away people and as a consequence they suffer illness or death, we, the taxpayers, may be sued for this. I with me also on the line here, Thomas Levitt. Thomas, you have any comments on this?
The extra item in question, one of these gentlemen was a guitar, which is obviously one would expect that this gentleman used to earn whatever meager earnings he could, and disposing of that in order to get shelter is probably a rather difficult decision, and it doesn't seem very reasonable that a guitar would be a difficult object or a dangerous object to have in possession at the armory.
The point here, Mike, is that tonight and tomorrow night, it looks like there is, if this caller is accurate, a new policy going down at the armory, which is excluding people who need shelter from space that is available. So maybe you can get back to Thomas on this issue. Thomas, you want to give Michael your number?
831-295-3917.
295-3917 is the local number. Mike, thank you for taking this call, and Thomas is going to be taking my show for the next few shows, and he will be responding on the air and passing on whatever solutions you and others have worked out on this issue. It's Thursday evening, about 7:20. Thanks for your time. And I apologize for being so lick-spittle on that issue with former mayor and continuing city council member Mike Rotkin. But I don't believe in being discourteous, even to those with whom I strenuously disagree. If you have anything you want to say on this issue to the community, we are a community radio station. 427-3772 is the phone number here. This report, if accurate, is disturbing. I don't have too much good to say about the armory, but...
It's there.
It is there. It gets you out of the cold. Admittedly, often into a room with everybody coughing on you, but still, it gets you out of the cold, and it gets you into a situation that is, I suppose, minimally safer in some respects, though not necessarily in terms of your property's safety. There's, particularly in San Francisco, with shelters, there's a lot of concern. I haven't heard a lot of reports of theft by, you know, between homeless people or from homeless service providers at the armory, so I don't want to say that that's happening. I don't know that that's happening. I know that it's really hard for people to use the armory for all kinds of reasons, and this seems an additional impediment.
Well, you know, it does mean it's more likely that there is, quote-unquote, space available, and therefore the necessity defense might be weakened.
This is another point which we haven't made recently on this show, but... it has been pointed out that if you get a camping ticket, you get a sleeping ticket for making your own shelter or just trying to hide somewhere in an out-of-the-way place and the police find you anyway, and you get ticketed with a $90 ticket, you can defend that ticket by going to the homeless service center, getting a piece of paper that says there was no shelter that night. In the summer and the fall and the spring, relatively easy to do because the shelter program involves only 40 people, 40 spaces. During the winter, it's up to 160. And as they do with the Pottinger, as I've mentioned in Florida with the Pottinger case, there's always a little shelter left, so that tends to be the excuse that they use. But I'm not sure how they may be just giving people those things to give, those pieces of paper to give to the courts. I understand they were several days ago, but I'm not quite sure if this was a story from further back. So I don't know. I know that the courts are still giving outrageous amounts of time for community service in violation of the municipal code, which says you can only get 8 hours of community service for violating the sleeping ban. That's due to the massive pressure by activists in 1999. So it's a real problem and a reality. But one of the things Thomas just said about the necessity defense, this is one way that people could fight the entire sleeping ordinance, which is to have... We need to have a systematic set of legal helpers set up whereby people would come in, challenge every single ticket. We were doing this in 1989, 1988, 1990, and flooding the courts with the demand for a necessity defense. But really, even if you do this, even if the courts throw out every ticket, the police can still keep arresting people, still harass people, still move people around until there is a court injunction. That was what the point that Chris Brazda had earlier against this kind of behavior. And that, of course, requires attorneys to come forward and do it, or it requires mass civil disobedience, which, of course, is the other approach. And that was suggested by Bob Patton in a tent city. Go ahead.
And, of course, as in Florida, the innovative police enforcement techniques may render any injunction less than fully effective.
I'm going to do a little history now. This is the last show of the old year. I think we're on the last show. Actually, January 1st will be the next show. You'll be able to spend your January 1st holiday here in the studio, Thomas. I envy you. But I'm going to have to leave it in your hands. Assuming I can find the proper tape, which is always a major problem, even after I bring it into the studio. I was doing radio shows starting in 1995, shortly after Free Radio started, but I began activism on homeless issues almost a decade before that, in 1988, in terms of my activity here in Santa Cruz. So I've got a lot of tapes, early tapes from these periods, which really constitute an interesting archive, and I'm looking for volunteers who want to help put these archives together, both to have historical understanding of what's happened and hopefully to have some impact on the future so that we don't have to go through this whole damn thing again. It's like you have to reinvent the whole process every time you try to decide what to do next. And to have some understanding of what's happened before can be very important. That said, what I'm going to still do is play a tape from 1996. This is not terribly carefully selected. I'm kind of hustling to get out of town. So I just pulled a bunch of tapes off the shelf. But this is interviews with people around the time of, I think it was the 202nd day of a protest that began in March 1st, 1996, by Sean Alimi, who's now dead. I called him Shit Kicker Sean. And Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, who's still alive and lives in Berkeley. They began sleeping out every night at City Hall, and people joined them. And this went on round the clock, and actually went on until November. And the city was being strongly pressured. Numerous things happened during this protest. Rotkin tried to close down the entire City Hall area to any kind of protest, saying that it was a threat to this or that. He couldn't get the judges to do it, but the judges did grant him an injunction which said if you sleep once at City Hall, it's punishable by 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. So during that period of time in 1996, people who slept there were facing 6 months in jail just to fall asleep once. Currently, that was the law for people who do it twice, who did it twice. It became a misdemeanor, and theoretically you could get 6 months in jail if you slept anywhere in town twice within 48 hours. Rotkin went into court to make sure that this was he wanted to deter and break the protest. He wasn't successful in that regard, but he did show how ruthless a board member of the American Civil Liberties Union, which Rodkin is, can be. Here's some of the interviews with actually a man who's now an activist with Tax and Regulate Marijuana, and they're planning to put that on the ballot, and we've talked about that. At the time, I called him Token Tim Rinker because he's an advocate of drug decriminalization, and we're going to hear some of his discussion here now.
Monday at noon in front of City Hall, I'm with Token Tim Rinker. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
And we just watched the City Council video from last Tuesday where the City Council meeting was, shall we say, interrupted by six people who chained themselves to the dais and the pews and so forth, and one who was also arrested, again, the cause being they demanded the right to sleep at night as they continued to chant. What I'm interested in, though, is in finding it. A lot of the material was taken by the police on, I guess it was Friday night or Saturday morning, this last weekend, including the display, has been returned thanks to the good work of Michael Sheridan and Ken and Gideon. Becky, what's your take on this returning of the property?
Well, you know, it's funny. These policies seem to change with the wind around here. What the police will take, what they give back, what they decide to do, what kind of laws they decide to force, what kind of laws they make up, like sitting on the stone wall, the low stone wall has become a crime in the office. Was it Officer Eveleth?
Yes. Gave a ticket to John Hernandez, I guess, on Wednesday morning of last week.
You know, I just finished watching a replay of the oral communications period at City Council.
That's the video I was just talking about, right?
Last September 10th. And I find it interesting that at virtually every City Council meeting, the vast majority of oral communications are about the sleeping ban. It seems to be a huge issue of concern, and yet the City Council has not even brought it up as an agenda item. They seem to be somewhat derelict in their duty about understanding what issues are of interest to the citizens of Santa Cruz.
And just a couple of references Becky made or were made by other people there. A week before, Jim Costner, Vinny Lombardo, a whole bunch of people were decided on a protest at City Hall around the sleeping ban. And what they did was they chained themselves to the furniture and the podium with actual chains and locks. And Dan Hopkins was also arrested for this. And it was in this same meeting that, and Rodkin was mayor at the time, that David Silva was thrown out the door by Officer Andy Crane into a pillar. He was running for city council at the time, and that actually crippled his campaign. He sued the city and won some money later from that. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
You've just used my real legal name on the air, and I'm going to do absolutely nothing about it.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Anyway, I wanted to just correct you. I was not a part of the protest.
I apologize. Yeah.
I was a part of the protest, and I was there in my doing journalism. I was there reporting live on Free Radio Santa Cruz back then.
Uh-huh.
Free Radio was homeless, and we were broadcasting from a bike cart, as you may recall.
Uh-huh.
We had ourselves a little walkie-talkie relay system, and Phil Free was holding down the fort at the studio, quote-unquote, while I was on scene doing live reports from that protest.
Huh.
Anyway, it was an interesting night.
Any memories of that?
Long time ago.
Any memories of that you want to bring back to us?
Well, things that stick out in my mind were that it was a pretty wild protest. About, I don't know, 100 people or so were involved. And that the police forcefully ejected everybody from the council chambers, including all reporters. What else do I recall about that? Well, I recall that it drew a lot of attention to the issue, and it was, in that regards, it was productive. What else? I don't know. I had a billy club shoved in my gut. I don't know.
Really?
I remember running around and doing on-scene reports.
Yeah.
That's what I remember.
Hey, well, thank you.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, and I appreciate it. And my apologies for exposing your identity.
Oh, I've been exposed.
All right.
Ciao.
All right.
I'll see you in about a half an hour, actually.
All right, then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, other things that happened as a consequence of that protest, every single protester was found not guilty, but the jury hung because one member of the jury refused to claim they were guilty. And I talked to him and interviewed him extensively after I actually wrote an article about him for Street Spirit. That's the homeless newspaper, which occasionally you'll be able to find around. It's not being distributed as much as it was. Becky Johnson's been sick and has also been, kind of battling a lot of other battles, although she and I disagree on some of the issues there. We don't disagree that the censorship she's been suffering and the kind of community hostility she's been suffering ill serves the community in terms of her work on homeless issues. There's no question about that. It's really sad to see people turning on each other. Because at this time, we had our fights even then. I mean, I think this protest was kept a secret from myself and Becky because the protesters felt we weren't sufficiently militant, or we were too loose-lipped. I'm not quite sure what the story was with that. But there were nobody. I think the only people who went to jail, people went to jail initially because they were arrested. But the only people who served time because this because of inept legal counsel, actually corrupt legal counsel, and there was an attorney called Salatich, who we still sneer at when we see in the courts, because he sold out one of the members of called it the lockdown trial. It was the chain gang lockdown trial.
What were they charged with? Disrupting a city council meeting?
They were charged with disrupting a city council meeting. And the defense that was used was that Rotkin cut off oral communication before it started. He didn't really give them a chance to disrupt the council meeting. He preempted the whole thing, and in so doing, which is something that he frequently does, as the earlier he had tried to preempt protests by trying to make it illegal to actually have a protest at City Hall, a peaceful protest with signs, as he had previously had signs taken down that were being held up by protesters, as he had previously allowed the police to seize blankets of protesters. All of this without any apologies ever from Rotkin. He's never apologized for any of these actions. He continues, he'll smile and he'll talk at you, and he's a friendly guy, you know. But it shows you amazingly kind of how there's such a disconnect between the personality, the persona of a politician, and the really often sinister substance of what happens under their regime.
So what actually was the ultimate outcome of this trial, et cetera?
There was no conviction except the people who pled guilty. And one, Salatich pled this one guy guilty. I think Jim Costner was one of the activists. He wasn't found guilty. I think there was a hung jury, and I'm going to have to go back. I want to be accurate in what I say about this. For those who want to follow this, it's in back issues of the Street Shit Sheet, which is the homeless newsletter that I wrote increasingly sporadically throughout the late 90s. It was very, very frequent in the late 80s and the early 90s. But it's in the library. You can go to the main public library and you can find it. And also, I was broadcasting about this regularly on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Of course, unfortunately, though the tapes exist for that, those archives are not online. I think the earliest archives online are from 2003, not way back in 96. But we'll play a little bit more of this tape and hear what was going down. The other thing you heard about was display devices. We had large signs in front of City Hall telling the public what was going on, and they went to court to make sure you couldn't have a sign more than 14 inches mm-hmm. across. It was like what they tried to do to break strikes. There was a real determination to silence people around this issue. At the same time, because people wouldn't give up, it became embarrassing to politicians like Kennedy and Rotkin, who have these liberal constituencies that they like to, and Matthews, who is also, she's our mayor now, she was on the council then, she was as bad as the rest of them, though not, she wasn't in the forefront. It was sort of Rotkin and Kennedy doing their thing. Should I play some more of this?
Sure.
Okay.
Comments on what you saw. You saw part of this video, which actually I want to commend the city clerk, Emma, for actually going out of her way to get a copy of. It had been taken out by Sergeant Andy Crane, who is one of the major players on the video. He flings David Minton Silva toward the door, and then apparently an off-tape piece according to David Silva, throws him 9 feet into a pillar. But you heard some speeches. You saw some of the videotape. Will it sell? Is it Hollywood material?
Oh, yeah. It's good stuff. That's a good shot of Andy Crane pushing David Minton Silva. It's perhaps not quite being pushed out of office since he's not even in office yet, but...
The same night that Silva got the endorsement of Bill Monick, the unsuccessful but very popular congressional candidate. I think he's an assembly candidate, one of the two.
Yeah, maybe that's Andy Crane's way of giving his campaign a push.
Giving it a boost, or pushing out, giving it the big push.
Push out the door.
Trying to give Silva the boot and ending up giving him a push. Well, I do commend this police department for returning some of the property that is taken. It looks like, and this stand, this cardboard stand that's on the sidewalk, I note that the literature has not been returned, or at least perhaps it's not immediately visible, and the money in the donation can has been removed for some reason, possibly to support the police officers' orphans fund. Could that be it, Rinker?
Orphans fund?
I don't know. Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we're talking to
Mark Absalon.
And we're here at the Catalyst, and that's Mork, M-O-R-K, or
Mark.
Mark. I thought I'd actually found a Mork of Mork and Mindy fame, but
Mark the hair-lip dog.
Mark the hair-lip dog. That's a bite of a different odor, so to speak. So you were in Watsonville with your truck and your partner here, and
my wife, Leilani.
Wife, Leilani.
We just got married 2 days ago.
You're under arrest. A marriage is punishable by congratulations and condolences, as I always say.
Thank you.
Yes. That looks like a good chicken burger, too, I might add.
It is.
In Watsonville, you were given a warning because you were sleeping in a vehicle, your truck. You've just sold your house?
Yeah, we had a double-wide trailer, 501 Green Valley Road. We sold that about 6 months ago. So our plan originally is to move out of the country, which is where we're still in. Doing that, but we bought a three-quarter ton pickup truck with a little canopy on the back, and we had permission from these friends of ours in Watsonville that we could park in front of their house, and so we were doing that for about a month, I guess, and one night there, one of the Watsonville police guys come over and woke me up about 4:30, and basically he says, you know, you're not supposed to be living in the back of your, you're not supposed to be camping in a truck inside the city limits. Mm-hmm. And he was going to give me a ticket for it. And I'm like, this is the last thing I need. And then he also said, because I had my truck for sale, I had a for sale sign on the shell. And he says, it's also another citation, $500 fine for each one, I believe, to have a vehicle for sale in the city limits and living in it.
So, in the end, however, he didn't give you a citation.
No, he kind of like gave me a warning and basically said, take the sign off by the morning and you won't be here.
And so where did you sleep the next night?
We slept in the Albertsons parking lot.
Also illegal, no doubt.
We didn't get bothered. We were there for the whole long weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
But you did remove your for sale sign.
Nope.
Aha. Well, I'm going to have to inform the Watsonville Police Department that there are some criminals at large here in Santa Cruz.
Well, it's not going to do them any good because we sold the truck.
You see, they slipped out again. This is what we need, harder jails and firmer sentences on individuals like yourself.
Well, catch me if you can.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
And that, of course, was a little bit off topic, but not really, because the protest was about ending the sleeping ban. And this is another example of using laws that essentially catch people that have no choice but to sleep at night, to try to find some legal shelter, try to do so in as reasonable and fair a way as they can. Instead of the police officer coming up to them during the day, he comes up at 4:45 in the morning. Imagine if some cop came to your door, banged on your door at 4:45 in the morning, announced you're in violation of some infractions, particularly if that violation involves something so basic as your right to sleep and to shelter yourself. I mean, it would seem to be reminiscent of some kind of fascist regime. And that's exactly what it is for poor people. Or am I exaggerating? What do you think, Thomas?
No. I just also say that if you happen to be sleeping in a vehicle and a police officer bangs on your door at 4:30 in the morning, put your head under the pillow, pull the blanket up over you, and don't answer the door. And they're not allowed to actually break into the vehicle.
I don't know where you get that from. I know that...
That's my understanding. I had a friend who lived on the streets in his vehicle for a long time. And
it's not true. I mean, as far as I know, I mean, it is often the wisest strategy to pull. But the police officer, if he can do so on a whim. But if he wants to do so and justify it, he can claim he heard stuff inside the van. He heard some rocking, heard mm-hmm. snoring, saw precipitation on the window. Still, it's often wisest because the cop, you know, may move along. But I, you know, police will stand on, start rocking on vehicles. They will pound on windows. They have also uh-huh. broken windows. Not recently, but certainly within the last decade that's happened here. But still, I tend to think your advice is not necessarily bad advice. Some more from the archives.
I just wanted to say on this whole issue of discriminatory effects of laws on poor people that a friend of mine just had effectively lost his primary mode of transport to and from work, a van, because he was driving with a suspended license. And the law apparently is that if your vehicle is seized when your license is suspended, there's a minimum 30-day impound, and the net cost of that is upwards of $1,400, and his vehicle simply isn't worth that much. And for a yuppie driving a BMW, you know, $1,400 and losing your vehicle for 30 days is an annoyance. But for a poor person, it's devastating, and can not just cost them the cost of the vehicle, but cost them their ability to get to and from work. And to earn a living, and in general, it takes a much bigger chunk out of their pocket than it does out of a upper or middle class person's pocket.
And also, this affects a broader swath of people. Suspended, a lot of people, of course, get their licenses suspended sometimes for valid reasons in terms of drunk driving or driving under the influence.
But he got it fixed the same day that this happened. His license, he got his license back, and it's unsuspended now, but his vehicle is still gone and still impounded. So obviously it was not a tremendously significant...
Bullshit.
Yes.
The
laws are just set up so that, like, you know, poor people are humongously disproportionately affected by them.
I agree. I'm going to play now. I'm going to do another blast from the past in the last 12 minutes we have here. I had originally planned to read a little bit about the war in Iraq, which is always a fun topic, but there's not really time to do it. Maybe you, Thomas, will have some time in your show to give people some updates. There, you know, the big question that people keep, you know, muddling around with, even though John Murtha, essentially a spokesperson for the Pentagon, I might say, a Democratic representative, a guy who, you know, he's been close to the military all his life. Essentially, he doesn't want to see the troops mown down there, and he thinks he doesn't mind, imperialism is fine with him. He doesn't want to see unsuccessful imperialism, and he wants to move the troops out of Iraq to nearby countries where they can move in at any time, and they can bomb the shit out of the, you know, quote, insurgents, whoever they happen to be. So he's not, you know, his withdrawal plan doesn't really suit me a lot, but it's a withdrawal plan. It's not like Kerry or any of these other clowns, although Pelosi and Dean have kind of signed on to it, and I think Farr, in some respects, has signed on to it. It should be said that Farr, our local representative, is still voting for the military budget, the huge, massive military budget. And so, you know, I keep making that point. The issue is that people get confused on is, well, you know, we created this problem, we have to solve it by staying around and aggravating.
But we are the problem.
Right, that's the point. We are the problem. The checkpoints, the massive foreign occupation is the problem. The arming of the Shiites and then the arming of the Sunnis, mostly the arming of the Shiites, produces a situation where you increase and inflame the civil war situation. So, yeah, there's going to be a civil war probably. It's too bad that there is, but it's not going to be made any better. In fact, what U.S. policy has been is reminiscent of British and French imperialist policy. It's provoked and sustained these divisions in order to maintain its own interests, which have to do with 14 military bases and oil interests and, I think, juxtapositioning vis-a-vis the Israeli government position and so forth. I hope you talk about this on the air, but because this show has been focusing on homeless issues, I'm going to play a little bit from an earlier protest at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. Actually, in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, we called it, I think it was Insomnia Night, November 4th, 1994. It's around election time, as I recall. November 1st, 94. And this is some of the protest discussion that was happening. We were trying to protest the sleeping ban. And here you're going to hear me raging away as well as other people until Vinny shows up. And I won't use his real name on the air. I will call him instead the V-Man.
In order to resolve these questions, there has to be public access to the streets for all people, rich and poor. And if the poor people are going to be herded off, selectively enforced, arrested for sitting, arrested for sleeping, driven out of town when they engage in political activity or just ordinary human functions, and I remind you, your people are saying human functions don't.
Sounds like he's winding down, doesn't it? It's a problem. Let's take a look. I think this tape may be in trouble. It's probably definitely in trouble because I think we have a tangled tape here. And what a tangle it is. Oh, boy. Well, let me throw on the emergency tape while I'm untangling this tape. Do you have any idea what you're going to be doing on Sunday, Thomas, or is it all going to be a surprise?
Quite honestly, I am not really thought through the whole process. 3.5 hours is
quite a challenge.
Amount of time, so I'm hoping people call in with interesting and provocative news. I'm certain that, of course, that I'll be able to rant and rave about various and sundry items of note, local and national in scope, for a substantial period. You can rant about the war in Iraq for an innumerable number of hours. But
Let's see if we can get... While we're waiting for your ranting, here's a little more of mine.
You can't sit down. You have to keep worrying about, you can't sit down at a cafe because you don't have any money. And, this planter is okay, but that one isn't. And if I'm sitting next to someone, and from a seated position, I can't ask for a dime because Mr. Coonerty and his council have made asking for spare change from a seated position, however peacefully, an illegal act, punishable by a $168 fine. And then by 6 months in jail if they decide to do that on the second offense. You can't do any of those things. You're excluded from public spaces, and you're excluded from the dialogue of what's going on in the town. No matter what kind of fancy city council 3-minute oral communications crap they give you, that's what you're allowed, Dodge. 3 minutes oral communication, then the council wrestles its papers and moves on to the next subject. We've attempted to discuss these issues before the council to get them to put the issue on the agenda for years and years and years, and they have utterly refused. And my thought has always been, because there is no real dialogue possible here. How can you criminalize the act of sleeping? You can criminalize the act of littering. You can criminalize setting up a campsite, but falling asleep is going to be a crime. How can any person really defend such a position? I don't think it is a defensible position. And often when I make this argument to the city council, I hear them say, Mike Rotkin, for instance, one of our council members, will say something like, you want people to sleep in the streets. You want them to sleep everywhere. And I say, no, I want them to be able to sleep somewhere, legally, in legal areas where they can sleep.
And more than one place.
And more, right.
To avoid the person you don't like, you know.
Right, more than one ghettoized areas. Right.
Sleep deprivation is the most effective way to break somebody psychologically. If you're in a war and you want to get information, interrogate somebody, or torture somebody, you deprive that person of sleep, and they become psychotic within 3 to 5 days. It's a psychiatric fact, a physiological fact. If homeless people actually obeyed the law and deprived themselves of sleep, they'd all be psychotic.
Which actually was a strategy that was proposed in Santa Barbara against their sleeping ban. They propose people stay awake all night and then start falling down from psychosis and overburden the hospital system. Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara is actually a city that once fought its own sleeping ban effectively. Homeless people in Santa Barbara turned back their own sleeping ban in 1986. And the way they did it was they got 3 organizers from out of town, one of whom was Mitch Snyder from Washington, D.C., from the Community for Creative Nonviolence, and they issued a call to homeless people all over the country to come to the Fig Tree, which was the center of the homeless community in Santa Barbara in 1986. Come to the Fig Tree on September 1st. And so all over the country, homeless people prepared to come, and the city council, 2 weeks before this great march, said, we surrender, we're changing the sleeping bin. They did that in Santa Barbara. Now, 3 years later, the courts made some fancy rulings that negated the city council's decision. But it's direct action by people on the streets, by all of you, that can change these laws. Direct, strong solidarity with each other. Now, tonight is going to be an instance of that direct action. Some people will choose to sleep out here on the street, not because we like sleeping on the street, not because we like getting tickets, not because we hate Neil Coonerty. I don't hate Neil Coonerty. I do not like, and I do hate, the laws, and I am angry and disgusted at the fact that council members tolerate these laws, and that this is something that some people may not know who are here. The reason that 6 new laws got on the books, the worst laws in the state on panhandling and sitting and setting up political tables, the reason these laws got on the books in March and April of this year was because the merchants downtown didn't like a little teeny peace vigil that 3 activists set up. Dave Jacobs, Robert Flory, and Bob Grant, a couple other people actually as well. Very limited vigils for 1 week and 2 weeks. 1 week at Valentine's Day, and then before that, 2 weeks during the Christmas vacation. They were pointing out to people the sleeping ban was unjust. And they were pointing it out by sleeping on the street against the fence over there. Right beyond Noah's Bakery, when there was a big open fence area, they were on this side of the fence. There was a huge sidewalk. They weren't blocking the sidewalk. But the merchants, in their arrogance, in their outrageous arrogance, rather than deal with the issues that they raised, pushed the council to press new laws, making it criminal to have a nighttime vigil, making it criminal to sit down on the sidewalk, making it criminal to ask for any spare change. The reason that we're here is because reasonable dialogue has failed. But apparently power yields nothing unless you respond with counterpower. I'm not talking about the unjust power of harassment or violence or vandalism. I'm talking about the power of people who say, we will not go away until this law is changed. That's what I'm talking about. This is an open forum. You don't even have to stand up here to talk, but if anybody wants to come and talk, this is old Tom here. In case nobody knows, Tom was a communist. Tom was a wobbler. This is Tom. Tom, he played a saw. And he would have rolled over in his grave if he knew that the merchants had done this.
Anarchist.
He was also an anarchist, but he later in his life he was a communist too, to be honest about that. So, he's here. If anybody wants to speak, come on up and speak. I believe you wanted to speak, Edward.
Yeah, I was going to say something. So I live at the Hotel Royale down the road.
And there were a lot of speakers, but unfortunately, my time is up. I'll be back on January 20th or thereabouts. Thomas will be back on Sunday. And you can be back at any time, because Free Radio Santa Cruz is open and sympathetic to listeners. They're willing to take and interested in taking news reports about what's going on the street, like the report tonight that the Armory is turning away people who have anything more than a backpack. If that's true, I hope you continue to give us these reports at Free Radio, because that's the only way to put pressure, at least not the only way, but certainly one of the good ways to put pressure on politicians is to get the word out. If you want to get in touch with Huff while I'm gone, you can leave a message and I'll get back to you when I return, 423-HUFF, or you can leave a message on Thomas's phone, 295-3917, 295-3917. That's on the Huff voicemail in case you forget the number. And you can go to the voicemail, the Huff voicemail, 423-HUFF, then go to Thomas's number, 295-3917. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathurst Beer's Broadsides. I hope you appreciated the history lesson. That was from 1994, November. Let's make some history. Thanks.
Silent soldiers on a silver screen, framed in fantasies and drugged in dreams, unpaid actors of the mystery. The mad director knows that freedom will not make you free. And what's this got to do with me? Are almost never made, and they're afraid that I'm afraid. Just to blind the blind, poison players of a grisly game. One is guilty and the other gets to point the blame. Pardon me if I refrain. Find a flag so you can wave goodbye. But just before the end, even treason might be worth a try. This country is too young to die. And their whistling marches as they mow the lawn. And the gargoyles only sit and grieve. see. You only are what you believe.
And indeed, you're tuned in to Freak Radio Santa Cruz, operating without a license at 101.1 FM, streaming live to the world at www.freakradio.org. It's a little after 8 p.m. on Thursday evening. I'm Uncle Vinny, sitting in for Uncle Dennis. This is From the Cream to the Dregs, and I won't be bringing you... Well, I'll be trying to bring you a little bit of some of the... musical stylings that Uncle Dennis brings you week in and week out, some of the unknown or underplayed music of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But the first hour of the show, I'm just going to be playing some music, different things. We're going to be hearing a little bit more of this CD from the Reverend Horton Heat that I just received for X-Mass from my lovely sister in Philadelphia, who had the great pleasure to see the Reverend Horton Heat play a couple weeks back on the East Coast and pick me up this CD called We Three Kings of Christmas Favorites by the Reverend Horton Heat. And listeners of Free Radio may have heard my show, Rockin' the Boat, on Friday, the extended four-hour Christmas special. I would have loved to have this CD for that show, but in fact I didn't get it until this week in the mail. And it being in between Christmas and New Year's, I figure it's still sort of Christmas time. So I can get away with playing a couple more tracks from the Reverend Horton Heat. And when I come back, I'll be telling you a little more about what's coming up later on in the show. So stay tuned to Freak Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. This is the Reverend Horton Heat's rendition of Silver Bells.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air there's smile after smile, and on every street corner you hear silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Stoplights blink a bright red and green as the shoppers rush home with their treasure. Hear the snow crunch, see the kids bunch. This is Santa's big scene, and above all this bustle, you bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling, hear them ring. Soon it will be Christmas Day. It's Christmas time.